softly, as in a morning sunrise, the light of love comes stealing into a newborn day.
Well, we're here at Mohegan Sun with Terry Woodson, who is the music director of this wonderful orchestra, the Don Trenta Orchestra, accompanying Frank Sinatra Jr. And Terry, having seen you perform several times with this orchestra, I must say it's one of the finest orchestras, I think, that has been assembled anywhere. And you've got an all-star group with you, haven't you, including a full complement of strings?
Yes, we do, and it is a great orchestra here. But it's the music itself that rises the orchestra to another level. We go travel around the country, and we get very good orchestras just about everywhere we go because the musicians love this music, and they want to play this music. And it's like when you're playing golf with somebody better than you, they raise your levels. And this is what this music does to the musicians. They enjoy it.
Before Frank Sinatra Jr. even comes on stage, when you hear the overture, it sort of brings you back to, you're out at the Capitol Studios in Hollywood and you're listening to the Nelson Riddle Orchestra or the Billy May Orchestra or those wonderful sessions that Frank Sinatra did out there. Even before Frank Sinatra Jr. comes on stage, you sort of set it all up.
Well, that's the purpose of it. The show is called Sinatra Sings Sinatra, and we want to set that mood and that feeling of a Sinatra concert, and that's what we're doing.
Are you using a lot of the original charts, the charts that were used in the actual sessions?
They're all original. They are the original charts. When Sinatra Sr. Passed on, he left the library to Sinatra Jr. and to use the library, and that's what he's doing.
I know the programs change, the programs vary. You include other things that maybe are not included regularly as part of the program. Last night, I guess you had a couple of new things in there that you did.
Well, we like to keep changing the show. It's an evolving work in progress. And Frank Jr. does his portion of it at the beginning of the show and features his material and his style. And then the second segment is features the father's material. But we do, it's such a vast library that you keep trying to change it. You want to use it all, but you can't. But to keep things fresh, and especially when you go back to a place like we're here at the Mohegan, where we've done a program last year, we want to do different things this year. So people come back, we'll see a different show. It's not the same show every time.
Last night, you had the soliloquy from Carousel, which is a long tour de force for anyone. I thought that Frank Sinatra Jr. did a wonderful job on it, and the accompaniment with the strings.
Well, that's kind of a tribute to his father, because his father really enjoyed doing that. He loved that soliloquy, and Jr. does it very well, too. The father, it had meaning, because he'd seen the show and knew the people. And so with Junior, I'm sure he's seen the show, but there's a different feeling. He's doing it as a tribute to his father.
Another one that stands out, for me anyway, was At Long Last Love, that wonderful Cole Porter song. There was a moment there when, while listening to Frank Jr., that, you know, the phrasing, the intonation just was uncanny. It was sort of like right off the record.
Well, he does have the same last name.
Yeah.
And he worked with him and conducted for him and grew up with him, so there's got to be some similarity.
The show is all tied together, too, with narration. You take us through a journey through the early years, through the Dorsey years, up through the 50s and the 60s. So there's continuity within the show itself that you tie together musically, sometimes with little intermezzos in between.
That's true. Basically, this is a reduction of the album we did in 1995 called As I Remember It, which Frank Jr. took the listener through the years and as he remembered it as a child, a young man, an adult, hearing his father's music. And he does it chronologically, and he set up this show very much the same way that we started. Here's an example of the dance bands. Here's a damn example of the Capitol years. Here's the reprise, the concert Sinatra. And then the you know, what he was doing at the later years of his life.
The 1950s were indeed Sinatra years. I can remember at that time reading a quotation in one of the columns by one of the music writers of the day. He said the record albums streamed off the presses in their hundreds of thousands. In one decade alone, three of his songs from movies went on to win Academy Awards. It was a great victory. And something else happened. When he was in his 20s, they called him Frankie. By the time he moved into his 30s, he became Swingin' Frank. But as the 1950s began to wind down, in his 40s, he acquired one name which he bears to this day, Sinatra.
Every year, I've been doing the Strictly Sinatra show now 5 hours every Saturday night for 10 years here on WPLM, and I play that on Sinatra's birthday every year. Play it in its entirety. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing the response from the listeners who hear it about that. There's such an emotional connection, you know, with Sinatra Sr. and Jr. and that whole thing, the way it comes together. I think it's two CDs.
It was Frank Jr.'s idea. I produced it and conducted it, but it was Frank's his conception to do this, and he listed and also what he could sing, mm-hmm. What he wanted to do, and limited by the orchestra, although we had a very good orchestra for that also, New York's finest. But it was a tour de force on his part at that time, because his father was still alive, he was still conducting for his father, and it was a gift to his father, a present, which I think he enjoyed very much and was very moved by it.
Put your dreams away for another day, and I will take their place in your heart, wishing on.
It was last year. Was the 90th anniversary of Frank Sinatra's birth, so it had a special meaning, I guess, that everybody listened to the show.
Right.
The new CD, That Face, we're getting a wonderful response on that from the listeners to the show. And you use a lot of some of the original arrangements by Billy Mays in there, and I think Don Costa, too?
Well, that's correct, but these are Junior's arrangements. We wanted to, with That Face, we wanted to take Junior away from father and let people hear Frank Junior as himself and do things that are not related to his father, because he's very talented and he's a very good singer and deserves to be heard on his own, mm-hmm. on his own ground.
Yeah.
And so we had, but because of Junior and Senior's relationship with those people, with the Costas and the Riddles and the, you know, those Billy May, they wrote arrangements for Frank Junior too. Not exclusively for Senior, but for Junior too. And there were some arrangements that have been in Junior's book for a long time, have never been recorded. So that's what we thought. These are really good arrangements, and they deserve to be heard. And Frank really sings them very well. And then there were a couple of things we found that in the father's library that had never been even rehearsed. They'd been ordered up, good idea at the time. Somehow it went by the wayside. So we found these, included those. And then there were two tracks that were recorded in 87, I believe, where there was an album that Frank Jr. produced. It was going to be an album. It was never finished. And the father sang on that album, but he was never pleased with his voice, and they never got back around to finishing it. Mm-hmm. So we had those tracks. So Frank Sinatra Jr. really enjoys those arrangements. We said, let's use those. So, and he had been using some of them in his is concertizing around the country. So let's use those tracks with the original players.
I'm amazed how much we talk about the musicianship and the high caliber musicianship, the musicians you work with, of course, an example of that in that orchestra. But also the knowledge Frank Sinatra Jr. has of not only this music but classical music as well. And he wrote the liner notes for that CD, That Face. So that comes across in his work as a musicologist too.
Of course, and a lot of the people he knew, such as Billy May and Nelson Riddle, and the musicians. He's always been a friend of the musician, and especially the guys that worked for his father and recorded for his father. He's known them for years, and I know many of those, and myself, we're in the same circle there, and as far as musicians who know are good friends, and I was, not a bad musician myself.
That face, that wonderful face, it shines, it glows. All over.
Talking with Terry Woodson here at Mohegan Sun, where he is in the middle of an engagement with Frank Sinatra Jr. And this is a wonderful show for all of our listeners here on Strictly Sinatra. Terry, I want to go back and trace a little bit about your relationship with Frank Sinatra Jr. and how long you have been associated with the show and Sinatra in general.
I've met Frank Sinatra Jr. in 1964. I had just graduated from college and was going west, young man, and went to Las Vegas for the first time on my trip to California to make it big. And there on the marquee, I think it was the Frontier, it said Frank Sinatra Jr. with the Larry O'Brien Octet, or I think that was what it was. And I said, well, me being a trombone player, I know Larry O'Brien. I want to go see Larry O'Brien. And I went to see Larry, and I didn't care who this guy singing was. And Frank came by, and we met, and he was very nice to me. We had a wonderful evening, and been friends. There was a period where we went our separate, career ways. He was on the road. I'm trying to make it in Los Angeles. But I worked for a fellow named Vern Yoakum, who had a music preparation company, which is music copyist. And he handled the music of Frank Sinatra and Nelson Riddle and Nat Cole and Billy May. And I worked for him. And I, through that association, I met Frank Jr. again. Mm-hmm. And we kind of, I was taking care of his music. And we started a friendship, just a working friendship. But as things got, as we went along, we got closer and closer. And then in 95, we were going to do the Carnegie Hall. They did three nights, a tribute to the music of Frank Sinatra. And Frank Sinatra Jr. put together this concept of, as I remember it, and I worked very closely with him. And then I came to New York, we did all of this, and that later became the album. And I had produced several albums on my own of other music, and so Frank asked me to produce it, and I was glad to do it, because I was one of the few people who understood what he was trying to do and could help him accomplish that.
You consider the spin-offs from what you're doing with Frank Sinatra Jr. now, and so many of the other singers out there who recorded tributes to Steve Terrell, mm-hmm. All of these other singers that are recording this material, and you realize that the spin-offs in themselves have had a big effect on younger people who are discovering the music. Diana Krall, for example, does a lot of it, mm-hmm. Who are singing the Sinatra songbook as well.
Well, that's true. It's kind of like he's never been as popular. And that style of music is coming back, I think. And thank God for that. I think people are tired of hearing angry is the word, yeah. Mean-spirited rap music. And not that all of that is bad, but it seems to be predominantly what you hear on the radio. And even the rock and roll stuff, I think they're growing tired of that. And there's something that, here is something with return to a storyline, you know, and it's something more than just 1-4-5 chords.
Something in your eyes I see soon begins bewitching me. It's that old devil moon that you stole from the sky. It's that old devil moon in your eyes.
You'd be pleased to know that many of the listeners who listen to the Strictly Sinatra show, I get, you know, emails and letters from young listeners. One 7-year-old boy said his favorite Six song was Mr. Success. He loved that. And he came with his grandfather to one of the events that I had where we were appearing. And he came right up to me. He said, this is my grandson. Tell him what you like about Frank. So, you know, it crosses all age groups.
Yes, it does. Mr. Success was one of the two songs that Frank Sr. wrote. I have this also in an international concept. I take an orchestra every other year to Japan, and it's the music of Percy Faith. And the fan base over there is all ages, and especially growing among the younger Japanese. They love that music, and it's very good music, by the way. He was a wonderful orchestrator and arranger, but they love it. We sell out over there for a month of concerts, and I think it's a very good thing that this type of music and that Frank is doing what he's doing and that Steve's doing what he's doing and Diane, you know, to reacquaint a younger generation to the beauty of this music. It's somewhat like what Linda Ronstadt and Nelson Riddle did when she did her sophisticated albums.
Interesting, it has two parallels too. Your work with Frank Sinatra Jr. and the fact that so much of the other material that Sr. recorded, just a box set just came out, Sinatra in Vegas, 1961, I think it's a Sands recording, 66 Sands, the Basie thing, the part two of that,
right.
The Golden Nugget, Caesar's Palace, plus a DVD. All this material seems to be resurfacing again and again, which of course runs parallel to you and Frank Jr. perpetuating the legacy.
Well, yes, and I worked on some of them. My friend and co-producer Charlie Pignon was responsible for putting that together, and that's a wonderful box set, especially that DVD. It was Frank in his glory, and I can't describe it. I watched it again last night with one of our trombone players, Eddie Morgan, and we just sat in awe because he played on a lot of those things, and to remember those days and to relive that now is it's a wonderful experience. It's the music of our lives, has been said. Underscore of our lives, and to be a part of it and to play the original arrangements and have a Sinatra singing it, what can be wrong with that?
Let's not talk about the fight. Everybody's been talking about the fight all day long. It'd be funny if they don't show up, those two guys, tomorrow night. They decide to go dancing someplace. Same question all over town. Who you like? What's the price? Because it was five, it was four, it was three and a half. I'll go 3.5. Everybody talks like that around, especially Jilly. You have to be some kind of machine to understand what he says half the time. I said to him, what'd you think of Amadeus? He said, Manon, they got some team. I'm not joking. I mean, he's got it here, you know. Ooh. They got some team. He probably thought it was a Greek restaurant, too.
Terry, I want to talk a bit about Bill Miller, the late Bill Miller, who was certainly had the longest connection of anybody in the orchestras that worked with Sinatra and then worked with Frank Sinatra Jr. and you. We lost Bill Miller about a year ago, and that was a big loss to everybody because he really was the direct link, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. When, how long is it? July 11th, right, of this year. What a trooper, what a musical artist he was. Through all those years, and you hear him playing, epitome of taste. But he did, he was the connection. Of course, Junior, the son, is the ultimate connection, but Bill was there for all of that. And we loved Bill. We had so much fun with him and respected him so much. And he wanted to go on the road. It wasn't like anyone forced him. He enjoyed it. He came out on the road just like he had been doing for 50 years, you know. And that was his home. He really loved it.
Terry, thanks so much for chatting with us and the great contribution that you're making, along, of course, with Frank Sinatra Jr., to perpetuating the legacy to, you know, thousands of people who perhaps never really heard Sinatra in person. And it continues through your efforts. And I have to say the musicianship is absolutely first rate, too. And a lot of that has to do with the music director.
Well, thank you very much. But, you know, a lot has to do with Frank. People have been listening to this music for 50 plus years. And we try to do what the record did. When they come to the casino or they come to the concert hall or venue, that we recreate what they've been hearing for the last 50 years. We're not cheapening down with synthesizers or substituting this or that. This is the same ensemble that recorded the music, and the audience deserves to hear that. And if they don't, they think something's, they're not sure, but something's wrong. And my aim especially is to make the sound as close to the record that the people have in their heads. My job is to make it as close to that as possible so that they're comfortable with it and they enjoy it. We're not doing like, you know, a record sound alike. This is Frank Jr. singing in his voice. But as far as the music goes, we want to make that as close to the record as possible.
What a difference a day made. 24 little hours brought the sun and the flowers where there used to be rain. My yesterday was blue, dear. Today I'm part of you, dear. My lonely nights are through, dear. What a difference a day. And the difference is you. And the difference is you.
That was a conversation with Terry Woodson, Frank Sinatra Jr.'s musical director. Our producer was Jonathan Higgins. I'm Ron Delachiesa.